Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is a Friday as we continue along to get ready for the NCAA tournament, but we had the trade deadline yesterday in the NBA. You know, sometimes when if you want to get to a destination and you're like flying, for example, and you're like, well, you got to stop in Detroit. And you're like, why can't I just go straight to Los Angeles or straight to Dallas? Like, you got to go to Memphis, to Detroit, and then to Los Angeles. Sometimes that is not the easiest way to get to your destination, but it might be better to go that way. If you're in the NBA and you want to play for a team, if you want to play for a certain team, land with the Houston Rockets first, because they don't seem to have any problem shipping you to eventually where you want to go. James Harden wanted to play for Brooklyn, fought and argued and blah, 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 became a pain. They sent him to Brooklyn. Victor Oladipo arrived. They sent Caris LeVert to Indiana, picked up Oladipo, thought, oh, maybe we can offer him a nice long-term deal to play for Houston. And guess what he said? Nah, I'm not really that interested in playing here. But you know what? I really am interested in playing with is Miami. If you'd be interested, I'd like to go to Miami. Is that a possibility? And the Rockets said, of course. We'd be more than happy to send you to Miami at the trade deadline. That's exactly what they did. So Victor Oladipo now gets to go play for the Miami Heat. So if you are an NBA player and you can't get a direct flight to the location that you want to go, make a stop in Houston for a season or maybe even a half a season. Eventually, they'll send you to where you'd like to go. They probably have a form you fill out and everything. Give us your top three destinations. Oh, you know what? Screw it. Give us your only destination. We're not playing around. We'll just ship you off to where you want to go. Two players in the last, 3 months have been able to be jettisoned to their desired location because Rocket management was more than happy to accommodate that wish. We got the winners and the losers coming up. Looking at Orlando, who's going through an entire rebuild, and they have shipped a lot of assets around the NBA. So who won in that? But there is a team in the West that is the number one overall winner. I don't know if it's enough to get them over the hump in terms of winning the conference, but now it makes the West very interesting. I'll give you that team as we continue. It's Tony D, Ron Culver. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call, SportsMap Radio. I'd love to hear from you on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Trade up any non-contact thermometer for a $5 rebate towards an Exergen purchased at any retailer. Accuracy matters more than ever when taking temperature, and published research shows non-contact models miss 5 out of 6 fevers. Upgrade to Exergen, the only home forehead thermometer proven accurate by published peer-reviewed clinical studies. Details at Exergen.com. All right, so yesterday the NBA trade deadline came and went. There's probably one big storyline that came out of it, which was Kyle Lowry, who thought he was going to be leaving Toronto, did not leave Toronto. He even, after a game Wednesday, thought when he was leaving, he was giving signals of love to the Raptor fans that may be watching on TV in Toronto while they're playing in Tampa this season. He's been a longtime Raptor. People thought the 35-year-old was going to get moved because he's going to be a free agent this summer, and he wasn't. He was not. There was talks about him going to Philadelphia. Nope. Lakers, nope. Clippers, nope. Miami, nope. I mean, whoever had any interest in discussing Kyle Lowry and possibly trading for him with Toronto, the deal didn't land. Masai Ujiri did not send him anywhere. So there's two schools of thought on this, and I think for most of us who follow, like especially in the NFL and Major League Baseball, where when free agents are coming to a team that is, you know, looking to try to build for the future, we always say, please get something out of this. You know, if you're going to let so-and-so walk in free agency, at least try to get something out of it. But the second part of that is always, would you get nothing? I mean, would you take pennies on the dollar for a legendary star for your franchise? A guy that has meant a lot to your organization, a guy who's one of the best players you've had in your franchise history, albeit in the Raptors case, it's a relatively short history. It's not as long as like the Celtics because it was an expansion team way back. Would you take pennies on the dollar? Would you take a couple of picks? Like, there is a point where if you're Masai Ujiri, you got to say, no, for the legacy of this player, I'm not going to take scraps. I'm not going to take two future second-round picks for Kyle Lowry or and a couple of players with expiring contracts to even out the deal. Like, we're not doing that. Like, I need something of some substance. I need to feel like we're letting him go for building pieces for the future that matter, not something that we're going to manipulate later and possibly take assets and maybe trade them. You want to have some respect for what he's meant for the organization. I think that's what happened here. Now, that doesn't always happen. We've seen teams let go of major star players for situations like that, right? To balance out the trade, you get a bunch of expiring contracts and a couple of future picks. That's all you want to get because you're rebuilding for the future. The Raptors aren't having a very good season, and albeit it must be hard to be playing in Tampa, not home, and everybody else is kind of playing at home, and you're kind of this quasi-road team, right? You're on the road when you're on the road, and you're kind of on the road when you're in Tampa playing home games too. But the reality is that they can make a little push to get into this thing, give it one more run, and the deal with Lowry is not done. They can sit down with him in the offseason and say, what would it, you know, we're going in this direction. If you'd like to join us in this direction, we would love to have you. Here's what we can offer you. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. But you don't wreck the legacy of what he meant by saying, we'll take anything. Just get rid of him. We got to get something because he's going to walk. In the end, let him walk. Because if you let him walk, you go, well, we fulfilled everything we could with his contract. We let him stay. We ended up winning a championship. This season didn't work out so well, but in the end, everybody leaves here with some pride in the process. The team yesterday that I thought did really well, the team everyone's buzzing about, is Denver. Denver did fantastic, right? Because Aaron Gordon, who they got in the deal with Orlando, gives Mike Malone a defensive player they kind of need. They don't need Aaron Gordon to score. They score on their own. But Aaron Gordon allows you to have some flexibility on the defensive end of it, which Denver isn't particularly good at. They get rid of Gary Harris, and that would concern me in a way. Gary Harris was the guy, if you remember last year in the bubble, he was the one that gave Donovan Mitchell some fits in their 3-1 comeback in their playoff victory against the Jazz. He's a good defender, but they're going in a different direction. Aaron Gordon gives them a little size. I think this is good for Denver that's trying to find its own identity. They've got an all-star in Jokic. They've got an up-and-coming superstar in Michael Porter Jr., who's really starting to play well. They're a team that we've talked about the last couple of years. You know, Jokic is certainly emerging as a star, right? There is no question about it. What he brings as a big man is remarkable. But they don't have a LeBron. They don't have a Kawhi. They don't, you know, they really have a lot of diffused scoring throughout their lineup. And last year, they were one of the talks of the bubble because they had not one, but two 3-1 comeback victories in the postseason. They beat the Jazz and they beat the Clippers when they were down 3-1. They lost to the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. But the tenacity that they showed in the Orlando bubble, something I didn't think teams would actually have while they were there. Like, I still was hanging on to the belief that if you were in that bubble and you had a chance to get the hell out of there, you'd just pretty much get the hell out of there. Like, you're like, hey, we're down 3-1. Let's just go home. Like, we haven't seen our families. Denver stuck around and tried to win each and every one of those games and did all the way to the Western Conference Finals. And this year, you're seeing the Jazz, you're seeing Phoenix. This was the fear for Nuggets fans, and even and really, to be honest with you, fans of any team in the Western Conference, how good that conference is loaded. You don't need more bodies to the party, right? You do not need more teams on the rise. You know, Phoenix was a team last year that couldn't get into the 8-team playoff. Now they're the 2 seed in the West. Utah is a team that we saw kind of a storm brewing in Salt Lake City, how good that team could be. Now they're the top team in the West. Oh, and LeBron is hurt and will come back for the postseason refreshed and ready to go. The Clippers are still very good. Dallas has got Luka Doncic, right? I mean, you're Denver, you're sitting around going, I've got more teams to contend with now. And that's why people were excited about Aaron Gordon. He's not going to pour in 20 a night. He doesn't need to pour in 20 a night, but this was a good trade for the Nuggets. Orlando, unfortunately, got rid of – somebody pointed this out yesterday. They got rid of 4 of the 5 starters they had in their last game. I think it was Wednesday night against Portland, including the guy that hit the game winner with a couple of seconds remaining, Evan Fournier. He went to Boston. Nikola Vucevic, who's a double-double machine. He's an all-star nobody has ever heard of because, again, well, you probably heard of him, but you're not paying attention to him because he plays for a crappy Orlando team and has for years and years and years and years and years. He's now going to the Chicago Bulls or have a win now mentality right now. Orlando has basically said, nah, Markel Fultz got hurt. We don't have anybody. Everybody gets to go somewhere else. Terrence Ross, though, stuck around. And that's he's now looking around going, I think I'm the only one really left that can play on any level. So those were some of the big storylines yesterday from the trade deadline. Look, you know how this works, right? When we get to Major League Baseball trade deadline, NFL, NBA, there are two types of teams that really engage in this, right? It's the teams that are looking for that missing piece to do something now or at least by next season. And two, there are the teams that are like, yeah, we're done. We're done and we're rebuilding. So the store is closed, everything 80% off. Come on in, grab that washer and dryer you've always wanted. It's practically free. That's the two, this sort of mindsets come in. It's rarely two teams that are like, no, we're all set, but we're interested. And another team going, yeah, we're set too, but we're interested. You know, there's no major superstar for superstar. What it is a team like Orlando that sees the future and says, you know what? We're rebuilding. We got to start stockpiling some picks and some expiring contracts that can lead to some free up money. So we're more than happy to ship away these players, even though they meant a lot to us. We'll be more than happy to ship them somewhere else. And then there are teams that are like, yeah, and I'll take that missing piece, and I'll take that missing piece, and I'll take that missing piece. Evan Fournier to Boston. I don't think that's enough for the Celtics to be all of a sudden back in contention in an Eastern Conference in what is becoming a bad season. I don't think puts them from 8 to 3 anytime soon. But, you know, it's a move that they're making because they feel like there's something down the road. But that's basically the storyline from yesterday. We'll get into more of that coming up. But coming up next, now the NCAA tournament is in the Sweet 16. There are some teams, double-digit seeds, that are going to be making a run at the Elite Eight. So who do we like to do exactly that? That's next on Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
A weak battery could leave you stranded. Don't take a chance. O'Reilly Auto Parts will test the battery free of charge. If your battery needs to be replaced, their professional parts people can help you find the exact battery that fits your car or truck at a guaranteed low price. Make sure your vehicle is prepared for the weather ahead by getting your battery tested for free at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. All right, if we were in a non-COVID basketball season, we would be talking about the first part of the Sweet 16, which would have happened last night.
Yes.
4 games. We would have come back this morning like, did you see that game? And what does this mean? And this matchup on Saturday and in the Elite Eight? But we don't. We get it all this weekend. We get the 8 games over Saturday and Sunday. So it's been, you know,
too much.
It's a little too, yeah, got to absorb it all in. So there are, you know, as we've been talking all week, this has been a tournament that has had the most upsets, depending on how you define upset, of any tournament. It's had 12 leading into the Sweet 16 of a team that is five seeds less than their opponent winning that game. So you have Syracuse, Oral Roberts, Oregon State. They are double-digit seeds on Saturday. On Sunday, you've got UCLA. So you've got, five teams there that are double-digit seeds. Now, UCLA has got an interesting path here. If they were to beat Alabama, look, Alabama has been one of the top programs in the country for a while. Once we started figuring out early on that, Nate Oates' team could shoot the three and score on the inside, then they became a real national threat. The Bruins have had a good season, but not a great season. Pac-12 basketball, to be honest with you, I don't want to use disrespected because I think that word gets used a lot, but the nation really wasn't paying attention to them. Now, do I think that the tournament opens our eyes to the great basketball that was going on in the Pac-12? No, I don't. I think that there are a lot of smart basketball people who cover college basketball for a living that would have pointed to the play of the Pac-12 this season if it was stellar. I don't think that was the case. I've said many times, parity doesn't equal excellence. It just means parity. If you're beating up each other, it doesn't mean it's good. It could mean it's great, but it doesn't automatically mean it's good. Right. But it also, it could be bad parity, but it also could be good parity. If the Pac-12 was good parity, meaning, look, there's some real talent here, 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 I think the national attention would have gone to what it was doing. It wasn't. That was not the case at all. Not the case at all. And now the Pac-12 has got four teams in. Oregon State, which won its conference tournament, got in on that alone. The committee didn't think much about UCLA this season because they made them play Michigan State in the play-in game. Oregon and USC were a mid-seed of a 7 and a 6 around that middle part of your region, of your 16-team region. So it wasn't. Look, SEC basketball, as I've said many times, a lot of it's unwatchable. But Alabama and Arkansas were really good, and they got a 2 and a 3. Out of this deal, right? So the Pac-12 is giving you four teams, and all of a sudden we're supposed to go, yeah, the Pac-12 has been fantastic. It wasn't. This is how the tournament worked out for them, that they've got four teams. UCLA, if they advance to the Elite Eight, that's a legitimate team that could do once. I think VCU did this, 10 years ago, where they started in the play-in game and made it all the way to the Final Four. That's legit. Now, out of the East, they would end up playing Michigan or Florida State. If they were to beat Alabama, which would be remarkable, they would play Michigan and Florida State. And as I've said many times, you can beat one, you can beat the other. If they have the ability to beat Alabama, they have the ability to beat either one of those teams, even Michigan, a top seed without Isaiah Livers. But if you look at Saturday's matchups, Oregon State is an underdog in the matchup against Loyola Chicago. But wouldn't Loyola Chicago feel like a better team going to the Elite Eight in terms of a Cinderella surprise, they did it again, rather than Oregon State, who's given you nothing, really nothing this year except a Pac-12 tournament run? You know why? Because Oregon State plays in the Pac-12. They're a 12 seed. I mean, if they advance to the Elite Eight, this would be an upset. If Oregon State were to beat Loyola Chicago, this would be, it wouldn't be defined in an upset. It's an 8 versus a 12, so it's in that 4 differential gap. But that's technically an upset in and of itself. But Loyola Chicago has like a better Cinderella story. They went through this 3 years ago. They got Sister Jean. They play in the Missouri Valley. Here's another mid-major. But the team I think that's everybody's darling is Oral Roberts, the small school out of Tulsa, named after a televangelist who's got two of the most dynamic players left in the tournament as teammates in Max Asmus and Kevin O'Banner. And they're going up against an Arkansas team that at one point, seriously, no joke, the best team in the SEC, they just were not in the standings. They were playing so good. They beat Alabama. They were rolling through everybody. I picked them to win the SEC tournament. They did not. There's Oral Roberts just sitting there as a 15, ready to make another move.
They can't possibly do it, right?
You know what? You get into these things, and two things happen, right? When you get a And we don't see a lot of these 15, 13, 14 seeds get to the Sweet 16. But when they do, it's often looked at in this lens. Even though you know you've got a week to prepare, you get the selection Sunday and you get four or five days to prepare for your first round matchup. Kids are human. If you're a top seed, you think you'll roll. Next thing you know, you're in a dogfight. Next thing you know, you panic. And next thing you know, you lose. The team that plays, that they play next, only has a few days to figure out a team they have not paid attention to all year, likely have not paid attention to all year. The one difference in this game is playing in December and playing now are two totally different things. But Eric Musselman has played this team already. They played December 20th. It's not that long ago, and things certainly have changed for Oral Roberts. Their confidence level is better. What they do with Asmus and O'Banner are better. But Arkansas has familiarity with this. They know by watching the tape what defensive things worked, what personnel worked, and what didn't work. Now, it was a 78-67. It was an 11-point victory back in December. But you know coaches, they will break that game and go, yeah, even though we were leading, we noticed that this defensive thing wasn't really to our liking. We're going to mix that up. That's the ace in the hole for Arkansas in their game against Oral Roberts. That's not a surprise opponent. They've had a week now to analyze Oral Roberts' trajectory to this point. They've played them already. I have absolutely no doubt the Razorbacks will win this game.
Yeah. But on the flip side with Oral Roberts, they're going in this game knowing that they're not even supposed to be there.
Well, and also,
and that could be dangerous.
Yeah, and the confidence is way high. Like I said, it's not apples to apples. December basketball in a non-conference slate before Christmas is not the same as playing in the Elite Eight. It's totally two different mindsets. If you are Oral Roberts and you are in the Sweet 16, you are thinking of yourselves much differently than you are when you go to Fayetteville to play a non-conference basketball game, right, in December. Those are it's two totally different things. So that being said, no, just because Arkansas beat them in December does not automatically beat them. But I trust Arkansas being like, look, we're not taking this team lightly. We've already beaten them once. We know how to play these guys. We played them once. We're going to watch that film over and over again. And we do have more talented as a team. A lot of people look, Asmus and O'Banner are the two teams for outside of that. They are the two main scorers. For Oral Roberts, there's no other guy that's going to step up and beat Arkansas on the inside. But Syracuse is playing Houston, and that's the Saturday nightcap. I don't care. Take the 11 off of Syracuse now. I don't know where to put them. Just take it off. Just take it off. They're Syracuse. It's Jim Boeheim. Zone is tough. They shoot from the outside. That is not a shocker. This is not a shock the world situation if they beat Houston.
No, especially given you knew that Buddy Boeheim is a shooter. He's getting hot right at the right time.
Right now.
I mean, this
absolutely.
Is what it reminds me of is Steph Curry leading Davidson.
Right. Sure thing.
Back in the day. I mean, yeah. I never knew what Davidson was. I never knew that was a college.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Steph Curry comes along, and it was just, this kid who you can just shoot from anywhere on the floor and make it. And that's Buddy Boeheim right now.
The thing that's interesting about Houston is they do two things really well, and they're basic. They're the basic things you need to win games, right? The two things they do really well is they score. They put up like nearly 80 points a game, and they got really good defense. They really play well defensively. The problem is Syracuse throws you off so much, and Kelvin Sampson has got to then do what every other team that plays Syracuse do, right? They got to initiate a system to beat the zone, and if they do that, if they can do that, they'll win this game. But if they can't and struggle, Syracuse is, again, like you said, with Buddy Boeheim being as hot as he is, they're just good enough on the outside that they'll hang around. West Virginia had started to figure out how to beat the zone in the second half of that game. In the first half, they were totally befuddled. But in the second half, the Mountaineers started to play well enough to figure out. But Syracuse was like, that's okay. We keep it in check and we'll knock down the dagger three that breaks your heart when you're up by two. That's Syracuse's biggest weapon, is we'll slow you down with our defense, and when you finally get around to doing the right things against the defense, our guys will shoot from the outside and keep us in this game until the end. All right, it is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio on Twitter. at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's as we roll along.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along. Coming up next hour, Keith Smith will join us from Yahoo Sports. We'll talk about the NBA trade deadline and what happened yesterday, who won, who lost, all of those kind of things. Yesterday on the show, we started a conversation, which I ended up thinking about after the show was over. Because around this time...
This show will do it to you, man.
It does, man. It does. Around this time, March Madness, we see so much college basketball, right? We're seeing the women's tournament going on. We're seeing the men's tournament going on. And, you know, it leads into the amateurism of athletics and how college athletics, you know, can exploit student athletes and student athletes, you know, being in situations where it may not be the best environment for them to be in terms of a college setting. They may not want to go to college. They may not be suited to go to college, but yet that's the only way that they can get to where they want to go or feel like that's the next place that they want to go. Whereas in other countries, a lot of places around the world, that if you're a young kid and you're developed into you've got potential to be a star in a particular sport, they sort of pluck you out of your environment, send you to some academy. Your childhood is basically geared towards the perfection of that particular skill in that particular sport, and then off you go. And here we do not do that. Like if you're an up and coming baseball player, we don't grab you at 10 or 12 and tell mom and dad that you're going to be fine when we send you to, you know, Orlando to be at some camp for the rest of your childhood so you can perfect your baseball skills. Now, don't get me wrong. There's AAU, there's travel teams, but that's not the same as some young soccer player being off to the Barcelona Academy, leaving his family and friends at the age of 8 or 9 or 10 or 12 or whenever they do it. Same thing in auto racing, same thing in tennis. Once there's a development, when you see there's potential here, you can take it to the next level, which is I'm going to pursue this as a career and I need to be around people that are going to help me do that. I'll get my education, but my main goal being at this academy is to perfect my professional career of being a soccer player, a race car driver, tennis player, whatever it is. We kind of do the exact opposite here, which is we know the college game, football, basketball in particular, are really the pipeline to get to the next level. But what happens is we sort of cloud it with this idea that the amateurism of the sport has to be protected somehow, right? We all know when we watch the NCAA tournament that the business of the tournament isn't, and 64 schools arrived here in Indianapolis, all for college pride. Here are your future doctors, lawyers, engineers, and mathematicians all duking it out on the hardwood for the pride of their university. We know that's not the case, right? We know that. We know that there is a business here that is so big, it had to perform this in March. It had to. It could not say, yeah, COVID, still a problem, still an issue. Don't worry. We'll be back to this thing when it's all done. They had to say, no, we're going to put a bubble here in whatever capacity it can be. We're playing all the games here. Get your butts to Indiana. We're playing this thing. They had to. College football went through that in the fall. It's just too big a business. Now, listen, if there is an athlete that was ever told, hey, while you're here at State U playing football, you cannot pursue an engineering degree. You cannot pursue a degree in history or whatever it is you want. We're just going to give you basic classes and you're here to play. I would love to meet that person because for the most part, that doesn't really exist. If you want to go to a school to play basketball at, you know, Duke, you can get a degree in something at Duke. That's kind of the trade-off, right? The way it's done in other places, that's not really an option. Like if you're going to be a soccer player for Barcelona, let's say, that's what you're being trained to do. And you're either going to sink or swim. That's the way it is. We don't do that here. We don't. We take an athlete that's a good college football player, good football player in high school. We send him to college. He plays college. If he can get an if he wants to get an education, a college degree, he can. If he doesn't, he doesn't have to. And then after that, you're an adult. You're on your own. Go to the NFL. Don't go to the NFL. Whatever. And as we were talking about this yesterday, and we kind of only did it kind of a short period of time, I started thinking, how long would it take in this country, generationally, to accept that kind of treatment of young athletes in other countries here in America? Like, how long would it take? How long would it take before we would allow the Memphis Grizzlies to pluck a 12-year-old basketball prodigy and go, you belong to us, and we've got a nice facility here in Middle Tennessee where you can train, get an education, practice basketball, because when you turn 19, young man, we're all set for you to come and enjoy the journey. How long would that take? Because I don't think it would be instantaneously. I think we would be really perplexed by it. I think it would be kind of a culture shock if we did that. Look, Jordan Spieth was a golf prodigy. He spent his youth traveling around the country playing golf. He went to Texas, played 1 year, and I'm turning pro. Tiger Woods went to Stanford to play golf. Phil Mickelson played golf at Arizona State. If I'm not mistaken, I think Phil stayed all 4 years at Arizona State because his first year as a pro was not until 92 when he was 22 years old. So we have this system that's already built into place, but I wonder as we get to this time of year, what would happen if we started saying, hey, a 16-year-old could be playing at Kentucky. You don't need to be playing at Kentucky. The Knicks organization has a nice academy for you in Long Island that you can chill out for 2 or 3 years. Would we want that? Would we like that? Or are we so ingrained that the college system is the best way, is the best pipeline to the pros? It's not the only pipeline to the pros. We talked about this yesterday. If you're a good basketball player, you don't have to do the one and done thing.
But that's really the only sport, right?
But it's really it. That's
it's just
really
basketball.
It. You know, you did mention, look, if you're a high school student, you don't have to go play college baseball. You can go right to the minors. But you're done. You're at that point, you're usually 18.
Yeah.
17, 18. You are usually at a point in your life where you would have gone on to do some. We're not plucking you as a ninth grader and sending you to the Augusta Green Jackets or the Kannapolis Intimidators, right? We are letting you live with mom and dad, go to your high school, play in your AAU league or play in your travel team, whatever it is that you want to do in your comfort of your own community. But when you turn 18, 17, 18, you graduate high school, yeah, we can ship you to Wyoming to play in the summer league.
But see, that's the thing. I mean, I think it is, like, I think us as Americans look at college as that gateway. Because I can't remember, I can't tell you a time when Oxford College was ever really great in college soccer.
Sure, exactly, right, yeah.
I mean, I have no idea. Sure. I don't even know if they have a team.
Now, is tennis different? I think there was a tennis camp, I mean, tennis academy. I know Jennifer Capriati went there and Andre Agassi went there. But that's usually done, you know, the parents will pay money for that and send you down
there. Yeah, but even then, my wife played competitive tennis when she was younger, but it was still, she still had to go to school.
Yeah, sure.
It wasn't just, hey, you know, we're shipping you off and you're going to stay, you know, you're going to stay here. You're going to do nothing. You're going to live in dorms and you're going to be taught by tutors or go to school with other tennis players. And that's all you're going to do. It was never that.
When I was in minor league basketball in the late 90s into 2000, the development league for the NBA was forming. And the reason I remember that is because everybody wanted to work there. We were all in these barely get paid leagues, right? The checks don't really clear all the time. And the NBA was basically going to do exactly what we were doing. So we all wanted to work there. But that was 20 plus years ago. That was 21 years ago. And yet, Zion Williamson didn't go play for the Huntsville Flight, right? He didn't go to the G League. He went to Duke. He blew out his sneaker. Everybody told him, you should not play again at all.
Ever again in college
after he blew out his sneaker. But he did. And there, there is – we have not developed a system for the basketball player that could be in the NBA but can't be in the NBA because of the collective bargaining rule. We go – we send – we don't have a place for them.
But even then –
that's
like,
legit. You know, that's a legit place for – like that would go, of course I'm not playing college basketball. I can play in this other thing that is better for my career than giving up a year of my – of playing for free.
Yeah. 20 years ago, we were sending kids right out of high school into the NBA. And
right away.
And we produced some of the greatest NBA players ever. Kobe Bryant, sure. Kevin Garnett, LeBron James came right out of high school. But the thing was – they, you know, like what we've been talking about, at 9 years old when they showed promise, 10 years old when they showed promise, we didn't pluck them out and put them in an academy. They went to a more elite high school. They were probably recruited by a school to play for them. And so in a way, for LeBron James' experience, being recruited by the school, maybe that was kind of a similar way, gateway to an academy. But he was still just a high school student.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is, you know, you bring up all those great names, but we also had Kwame Brown. We've also had a number of players that didn't make it that were busts because they weren't ready. It's amazing on draft day, right? When you are drafted as a college kid or whatever, when you're drafted, one of the things that you don't see on draft night is what happens after they give you the uniform and you get the hat on and you hug the commissioner and you're like, yeah, I'm going. Right after that, the team goes, okay, here's what we're doing. Tomorrow, you're flying here. You're going to meet the media group, and then we're going to do this, this, and this. And then you're going to go through an orientation of how to handle your fame and how to handle, like, all of the things that a rookie has to do. They're absorbing that all at once instantaneously, and you better get it because the clock starts now, right? The clock starts now. The money's starting to come in. You need an agent. The endorsements are going to start pouring in. You're going to be wanting to negotiate your sneaker deal. You're the number two overall pick in the draft. You're the savior of this city. Can you handle that 19-year-old kid? But in these academies, the kids are already starting to deal with fame and expectations and all that. It's kind of built in, and they've got years to adapt to the idea of, yes, one day I'll be playing for Liverpool.
Right.
Right?
I know a famous example. It's always referred to as the class of 92, right? And it's a team centered around Manchester United. That part of the class of 92 was David Beckham, the only recognizable name that you know most of you guys will probably know. But there were, I want to say, six other kids that were part of this. They all grew up together in the Manchester United system, and they all made it to the Premier League Manchester United team. They all grew together and all handled this fame together. Now, obviously, you know, like David Beckham went on to superstardom versus, you know, say a Paul Scholes or a Ryan Giggs. But they were all part of the academy and did nothing, lived and breathed soccer, did education on the side. But they were all, there was these expectations held upon them. So by the time they reached it, just like what you're saying, by the time they reached the Premier League team, they were ready for it.
Sure.
They're ready for all the fame and, you know, the hard work, what entails to becoming a professional soccer player, a professional athlete.
Right. And you could make the same argument. You could say, look, playing at Kentucky, there's high expectations, there's media, there's fans, there's attention, there's fame. But it doesn't come with the sort of professionalism of, hey, now it's your job. Now this is what we are now paying you to do this. So you have expectations you have to live up to. Kentucky, you are protected under the umbrella or the under the umbrella of student athlete, right? You when you don't get overly criticized. It's almost embarrassing when you see commentators overly criticize a college kid, really throw out some hurtful "he shouldn't be playing here" comments because we're like, what are we talking about? These kids are kids. But once you start getting paid for it, the gloves are off, right? How do you handle that? And I don't know. It was a conversation we were having yesterday. I still was thinking about. I don't know if we're doing it right. I just know this is probably going to be the way we do it for a very, very, very long time. The billions that are being made these last 3 weeks, that institution is not crumbling down anytime soon, right? That's still a great way to earn your stripes in the world of basketball. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. It's a wake-up call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue with Wake Up Call. This hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can. So again, NCAA tournament coming up this weekend. If I were to look at this, I say it all the time. I'm trying to be really consistent here, which is when it gets to this time in the tournament, I like chalk. I really do. I like because we spend the whole season knowing who the best teams are. We don't spend any part of the regular season contemplating who's going to be a Cinderella. Like we don't say like a game in January, like this team. Yeah, when they get their 13 seed in the tournament, they're going to really make some noise because we don't know. We don't know if they're going to ever get in. We don't know what seed they would be, who they would face. So we do talk about, hey, is Baylor as good as Gonzaga? Is Michigan as good as, you know, we have these conversations during the regular season because, you know, we take a look at the top. Is Loyola Chicago, Oregon State, Oral Roberts good? Of course they are. Of course they are. Of course. And I'm not trying to deny that. But if you look at the South, if you get Baylor against Arkansas, I'm telling you that if you're going for basketball to basketball, that's going to be more fun of a game than watching Oral Roberts try to slay yet another Goliath. And if they don't, and Baylor beats them in the Elite Eight and crushes them, because by that time you'll have a lot of knowledge on Oral Roberts, you got robbed of a potentially great Elite Eight game. Don't get me wrong, the stories are fun, but when you spend the whole year contemplating how good really is Baylor, can Gonzaga win it all, what are the obstacles to win it all, you don't look at Oregon State as a team they have to muscle their way through.